worship God and to study from His holy word. And I would encourage everyone to take a Bible tonight because we're going to read a lot of passages from the book of Genesis. So if you'll begin at Genesis, the 30th chapter, we're going to read a lot of verses from this holy book. Now, what I want to make clear is if time's getting away from us, I'll cut back on some of the scriptures that I have listed because there's quite a few here. So I'll watch the time, and if not, I'll watch my wife and she'll make sure that I say, you know. So, but I want to study somebody tonight that I think we probably all studied when we were kids, if we grew up in the church at all. And that's this individual, Joseph. Joseph is a very unique individual, not because of he's different than us. I mean, we all have the same desires and things in our lives. But the point about Joseph is how he handled adversity. Joseph's life was, most of the time, nothing but adversity. And yet, we're going to see how he dealt with each of these things versus how sometimes mankind deals with the same types of things or similar things that might happen in their lives. So what I'd first like to look at is that Joseph was the son of Jacob and Rachel. And this is from Genesis, the 30th chapter, verses 22 through 24. It said, "Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, 'God has taken away my reproach.' So she called his name Joseph and said, 'The Lord shall add to me another son.'" Now, we want to mention right off the bat, there was a certain situation going on between Jacob and Rachel versus Jacob and Leah. We remember that Jacob loved Rachel the most. And we remember that Jacob thought that he was going to be marrying Rachel after working 7 years for her father Laban. And Laban did the old switcheroo and gave him Leah instead. And then Jacob had to work another 7 years for Rachel. So we see how deeply he loved Rachel. And this is going to come into play here because when she gives birth to Joseph, we're going to find out something about this boy. So let's turn, if we will, to Genesis, the 37th chapter, verses 1 through 11, as Brother Alan read just a few moments ago. And let's notice some things about that because this is going to play a large part in the story of Joseph. It says in verse 2, this is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons Bilhah of the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now notice verse 3. Here's where the problem starts. Now Israel, that or Jacob, either one, the names were interchangeable, loved Joseph more than all his children. Well, why did he love Joseph more than all of his other children? Who was Joseph's mom? Is Rachel. Because he was the son of his old age. So not only because Rachel was his mom, but because he was the son of his old age, he loved Joseph more than all his children. What happens when a parent shows favoritism? Does anything good ever come out of that? If there's other kids involved? No. What usually happens? There's animosity. There's resentment. Well, Joseph's family is no different than anybody else. Now notice he not only loved Joseph, we don't know. We just know it was very unique. It was very special. And his brothers picked up on this. It says, "But when his brothers saw that his father had loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him." Now Joseph was 17 years old. And it was very clear Jacob loved him the most. Now, verse 5. Now, Joseph had a dream. He told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. Now, notice this isn't the word they were upset with him. They hated him. So he said to them, now this is going to show some of the naivety of Joseph. Because he's going to tell these two dreams to his brothers and not think anything of it. He was 17 years old, okay? He's still growing up, all right? So he says, There we were, binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf. Well, everybody could tell what that meant. Joseph knew what that meant. The brothers knew what that meant. Once again, I think Joseph was naive in thinking that it wouldn't cause any more division between him and his brothers. And his brothers said to them, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. So the situation is just getting out of hand now. They're hating him even more because of these two dreams. That says, then he dreamed still another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream. At this time, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." Okay, how many brothers do we have here? We had 12 brothers. So 11 stars, who are they? They were his brothers. They bowed down to him. Now, Jacob wasn't too happy about this either, so he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, this is obviously foreshadowing, because this is telling us that there's going to be something happening in the future based upon these two dreams. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But notice what happened with the favoritism. This did not cause just a little division. They hated him. So let's go to chapter 37 and drop down to verse 12. It says, "Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, 'Are you not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them.' So he said to him, 'Here I am.' Then he said, 'Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me.'" So he sent on a mission to go see how his brothers are doing. So drop down to verse 18. He goes, and it says, "Now when they," that being his brothers, "saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him." Now how many brothers do you know would hate their brother so much that they want to kill him? Well, that's what they felt towards Joseph. "Then they said to one another, 'Look, this dreamer is coming.'" Now notice how they refer to him. They don't refer to him as their brother, "this dreamer." Does that sound familiar to maybe the prodigal son in the New Testament? When he called his brother, "this son of yours," to his father? "Then they come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." We'll show Joseph. We'll kill him. Then we'll see who bows down to who. "But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said to them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father.' So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it." Okay, so now Reuben, he's at least stopped the killing for at least the time being. But they cast him into this pit. They don't give him any water. Well, let's drop down to verse 26. Because they see these Ishmaelites coming. "So Judah said to his brothers, 'What profit if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh.' And his brothers listened. And then they sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt." Now, when we think about this, we had two brothers that stood up for Joseph, at least to some degree. Reuben at least kept him from killing him initially. And then Judah said, "Well, let's just sell him, and that way he's not going to be killed." But notice what they do. Let's drop down to verse 31. Because they sold him into slavery. Has Joseph done anything wrong to them? Well, he was naive in telling him these dreams. But so they took Joseph's tunic, killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the tunic in the blood. Now they're going to show their father, you love Joseph more than us, we'll show you. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not? Notice once again, they don't refer to him as their brother. Refer to him as his son. And he recognized it and said, it is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And he would not be comforted. But drop down to verse 36. Now the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. So we see what happens because of this envy and hatred, this favoritism that took place. They sold their brother into slavery, but that wasn't enough. They wanted their dad to think he'd been killed by some wild animal. Well, then let's drop down to Genesis, the 39th chapter. Because we find that Joseph is going down to Egypt after he'd been sold. And it says, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he had to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and that he put him, under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now this shows you trust. This shows you the character of Joseph. He was in captivity as a slave. And yet, because he was faithful to God, God blessed him, and he became so powerful in Potiphar's house, Potiphar didn't even know what he had unless Joseph told him. Now notice verse 6 at the end. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, so that tells us another tidbit about this guy Joseph. He was a handsome guy. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. Now, Joseph is away from his people. He's in captivity. He's second in command of Potiphar's house. And Potiphar's wife is trying to get him to commit adultery. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept anything back from me but you, because you are his wife. Now notice the next part of the verse, because this is the key about Joseph's attitude. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Who is praying by doing this? Yes, he would be betraying Potiphar. But first and foremost, he would be doing this against the God of heaven. And of course, we know what happens in the rest of these verses. She keeps trying to push him into doing this. And then she gets a hold of him one day when nobody's in the house. Takes a hold of his garment. Says, lie with me. And notice what happened in verse 15. Let's go back to verse 12. That she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Side point. Sometimes we as Christians have to run from a problem or a temptation. You know, Joseph could have tried to reason with her more, but he saw that there was no reasoning with her. She was not going to be content unless he did this. So he ran. Well, she spoke a lie about Joseph, told Potiphar that he had come to her and tried to force himself on her, and then Potiphar puts him in prison. Verse 20, then Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was sent there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Now, once again, this is the key to this story. God was with him. But notice why God was with him. Because Joseph was doing what was right. Do we see anywhere, now I can only go by what's written in the scriptures, but do we see anywhere where Joseph was whining and crying about everything? All we see from Joseph is when his situation changed, even if it was for the worse, he just did the best he could where he was at. So now he's in prison for something he didn't do. He'd been sold by his brothers. Well, okay, then he goes to Potiphar's house, gets into second in command in Potiphar's house. He thinks, okay, things are going good. Then his wife accuses him of trying to rape her. And now he's in prison. And not one time did he do anything wrong. But God was with him, okay? Well, Genesis 40, verses 9 through 23, we're going to see that there were two officers that were in the prison with Joseph. We have the butler and the baker. Now let's drop down to verse 9 of chapter 40. Because these two individuals had dreams as well. This was a common theme during this section of Genesis. There was a lot of dreams going on. But it was all for God to help Joseph in his situation. But it says, so Joseph told him in verse 8, to tell him, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell them to me, please. Then the chief butler told him his dream to Joseph and said to him, behold, in my dream, a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. It was though it budded. Its blossoms shot forth, and its clusters brought forth ripe grapes. Then Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and took the grapes, and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Now within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore it to your place. And you will be put, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to the former matter when you were his butler. Now notice verse 14. This is a key verse here. But remember me when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. So Joseph tells the butler, you're going to be restored after 3 days. Pharaoh's going to stop being upset with you and you're going to go back to your former position. But when you go back, tell him about me. And get me out of here. I didn't do anything wrong. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I've done nothing here that they should put me into this dungeon. Seems like a fair request, right? Well, then we find that the chief baker, he told him his dream in the latter part of the chapter. And Joseph said, well, in 3 days, you're going to be hanged, and your head's going to be taken off your head, off your body. In other words, you're not going to have a good ending. And we find out that indeed in verse 21, then he restored the chief butler to his butlership again after those 3 days. And he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Now, verse 23, what did Joseph request? Just one simple thing. Yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now, how can you have forgotten a guy that told you this great news, that interpreted your dream? But for whatever reason, he got back to where he wanted to be, so he just like, oh, I just forgot about him. Well, chapter 41, we find that Pharaoh's going to have a dream. And he's going to interpret that dream. And let's read verses 1 through 13 that's going to talk about Pharaoh's dream. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years, from the time that the butler and the baker, the butler was restored, the baker was killed. So 2 years has passed since Joseph should have been released from prison. that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he stood by the river. Suddenly there came up out of the river seven cows, fine looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then behold, seven other cows came up and out of them, out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the river. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the seven fine looking and fat cows. So Pharaoh awoke. He slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly seven heads of grain came up one stalk, plump and good. Then behold, seven thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. Now it happened to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. So now we find a ruler, a very powerful ruler, having a dream. Kind of sounds like Nebuchadnezzar, doesn't it? But all these so-called wise men of Egypt could not tell him. Well, now in verse 9, the butler's going, oh, wait a second, I remember someone. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh saying, I remember my faults this day. Well, it took you 2 years to realize it. Meanwhile, Joseph was still in the prison. When Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me in custody in the house of the captain of the guard, both me and the chief baker, we each had a dream in one night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each man he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me to my office, and he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have a dream. I've had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. Okay, now, Joseph's put in a very unique situation. He's before the ruler of Egypt. So he's getting his chance to try and kind of get out of this prison, right? But notice what he says when Pharaoh asks for this interpretation. So Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. This shows why Joseph kept getting blessed, because he stood up and was still faithful to God throughout all these trials and tribulations. And then Pharaoh goes ahead to tell him this dream. And Joseph says, well, okay, these seven cows and these seven sheaves are 7 years. There's going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine, that food is extremely scarce to find. And so, verse 29, it says, indeed, 7 years of great plenty will come throughout all the land of Egypt, but after them 7 years of famine will arise, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and a famine will deplete the land. Now we know from our study of Egypt along the Nile River, there was a very, very fertile area where they could grow crops. But even in there was going to be a very severe famine. And verse 32, and the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this and let him appoint officers over the land to collect one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the seven plentiful years, and let them gather and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land of the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land may not perish during the famine. So Joseph gave a very easy solution to this problem that's going to come up. You've got to store back. You've got to take those 7 years of plenty, and you got to store back this grain for those 7 years of famine. So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all of his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you." So now we've got a 17-year-old boy initially who was sold into slavery by his hating, envious brothers, and now he is going to be second in all of Egypt during a time when Egypt was the world power. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring, verse 42, off his hand and put it in Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, bow the knees. So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh also said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without your consent no man may lift his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Joseph, in verse 46, was 30 years old. So 13 years he had been either at Potiphar's house or in prison. And now, after interpreting this dream, he was put second in command. I apologize, I missed fast-forwarding there. So now, here's where everything comes full circle. We remember that Joseph had dreamed dreams that said his brothers were going to bow down to him, even his father and mother. And they said he was just some, you know, evil person that, how dare you say that we're going to bow down to you? Well, now, we find that there was indeed this famine. Verse 57, so all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain because the famine was severe in all the lands. So, Joseph had prepared the 7 years of plenty. So Egypt had all this grain, and so everybody that was around that needed food would come and buy grain from Egypt. Well, chapter 42, let's just begin verse 1. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." So they were in such bad situation that they needed grain or they were going to die. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, Lest some calamity befall him. And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among all those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. So we see the foreshadowing that had started long ago. It's coming to pass. Joseph is the governor, and his brothers are going to come to him to buy grain. And it says, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, "Where did you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." Well, then we see that Joseph goes through this process of trying to test his brothers. And he has his brother Benjamin eventually brought to Egypt. And then we find that he was accusing them again of being spies, and they say, "Well, let one of us stay instead of Benjamin." So we get down to chapter 45, verse 1. And we find that Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Does my father still live?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come near me." So they came near, and then he said, now notice, Joseph understood. "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." And then we find, as the story ends, that he brings his whole family to Egypt to spare them. And then Joseph's bones are eventually even taken back and buried in his homeland. We look at all the things that we can learn from Joseph, and this last thing I think is one of the most important. All the things that he had been through, through no fault of his own, he said, "It was God's plan for me. And because of that plan, I was able to be in a position to help save people from this dreaded famine and give God the glory." And instead of killing his brothers, he embraced them. And what a wonderful ending to this beautiful story. Let's think about the lessons we can learn from Joseph, how when there are times we go through things that we don't understand or we just don't see how it's working out the way it is. God had a plan for Joseph. He has a plan for each one of us. And let's have the attitude of Joseph that we stay loyal to God no matter what, and we are faithful to him throughout our lives. I apologize if I went quickly through some of this, and I know maybe there was some parts of the story that you would have liked me to have focused on that I did not, but for lack of be too long. But I hope we can learn from this man. He was hated by his brothers without cause. He didn't do the problem. It wasn't his problem. It was the father's problem in showing favoritism. He was sold into slavery. He didn't cry and whine about it. Once again, he was unjustly imprisoned after he'd been put in slavery. He just kept going. Interprets the butler and baker's dreams, and even after 2 years, the butler had not remembered him. Then he was interprets Pharaoh's dream, and he's put into this powerful position. And indeed, the dreams that he had came about. And finally, he was reunited with his family. This has a happy ending. I don't know about you, but I like happy endings. I hate sad endings. And I think this is one of those happy endings that we can look at and learn a lot of valuable lessons. At this time, we're going to offer the invitation for any who are subject to it. The Lord wants all to be saved, but it's our choice whether or not we go in obedience to his will. If you've never done that tonight, we'd ask you to do that. Maybe there's something we can do to help you of a spiritual nature. Maybe you've become a child of God and just need the prayers of the congregation or need to repent of some sin. We are here to help you. We love you. All of us want to go to heaven. So if there's any way we can help you that the Lord will allow, we ask you to come as we stand and sing.
Right with God, dost thou count all things for Jesus?